Welcome to The Bridge, a weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm Kathleen Morgain, your host for the show. This week, the Astoria City Council heard an impassioned plea from resident Robert Adams, asking for consideration of the intrinsic value of preserving trees against the monetary value of selling surplus property where the trees grow.
We are increasingly aware, I certainly am, of the fact that the trees are not entirely owned by us, that they relate to lives that we care about.
More public questions about Astoria's excess property sales. That story coming up at 9:20. We'll also hear from U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley on the Farm Bill, about Microsoft's new CEO, and why Oregon legislators can't agree on just what constitutes an e-cigarette. NPR News headlines are next. The time is 9:01. You're listening to The Bridge. I'm Kathleen Morgain. The Farm Bill passed the U.S. Senate this week and is now awaiting President Obama's signature. U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley held a conference call with reporters on Tuesday to talk about the top ways the bill will affect Oregonians. Although the largest part of the bill funds SNAP benefits, formerly known as food stamps, over $8 billion was cut from the program. The cuts will affect the 1 in 5 Oregonians and 1 in 6 in Washington who use SNAP benefits. 20 to 25% of Clatsop and Tillamook County residents are in the program. Senator Merkley explained his opposition to the cuts.
There have been two phases of these cuts, and so the numbers that have been coming forward have varied. There was one phase that was about $40 million impact on Oregon, and another phase that was significantly higher. And so I want to say the total was is over $100 million for the state of the two different steps. So it is a big deal. I did not support these cuts. I voted against them when the amendment came before the Senate. We are cutting programs at a time of record inequality in our nation, where vast source of new income is going to those at the very top. The number is roughly 95% of the new income generated since 2008 has gone to the top 1% in America. In that context of this growing inequality, some of these core programs that help people simply put food on the table shouldn't be the first place we're looking to cut.
The cuts primarily affect states boosting individual food stamp benefits via the so-called heat and eat allowances. Some states channel additional benefits to recipients providing evidence of increased outlays for household utilities and heat. Both Oregon and Washington are among those states. While some SNAP beneficiaries will suffer cuts, the amount of subsidies for top agricultural producers will essentially remain unchanged, although the way the subsidies are received are overhauled in the 2014 bill. Formerly, billions of dollars went to direct payments. As Senator Merkley explains, going forward, the subsidies will run primarily through crop insurance programs.
A lot of the direct subsidies were often for folks just not growing anything. And so the idea of going to insurance that provides essentially support for when things go wrong makes sense. I think it is the level of subsidy for that insurance is a deeply debatable item. It's highly subsidized, and we're going to have to keep wrestling with whether it's too subsidized in the context of other challenges. I think insurance is a better, fairer vehicle.
Also in the bill, Oregon farmers and ranchers will benefit through the restoration of disaster relief programs, compensating them for losses due to drought and wildfire. The previous program expired in 2011. Senator Merkley explained the critical nature of the program in Oregon.
Disaster relief is very important when the agricultural world is afflicted by forest fires or droughts. And we had these terrible forest fires 2 summers ago. And Harney County, for example, was quite hard hit. And there were 3 disaster programs that had expired that I've been working ever since to get renewed. And of course, they were in the got them into the farm bill, and the farm bill wasn't taken up by the House, and got them into the farm bill again. This time, it was taken up by the House, made it through conference. So these disaster relief programs are reauthorized. They affect areas such as forage on private land that's destroyed in a drought or fire, the forage on public land that is destroyed, the indemnity for livestock, and reimbursement for the cost of fences that are burned and so forth, and something called TAP, which is a tree assistance program that provides financial assistance to qualifying orchardists and nursery tree growers to rehabilitate tree bushes, vines, and so forth that are affected by fire or drought. So this is retroactive, by the way, so our farmers who did suffer these losses will be, and our ranchers who suffer these losses will be able to apply. And then I wanted to mention payment in lieu of taxes, or PILT, which is a critical lifeline for a number of our cash-strapped counties. We did get a one-year extension of PILT into the Farm Bill. It's $425 million nationwide, and a significant number of Oregon counties do. This is a source of funding to them.
As to why only a one-year extension for PILT, Senator Merkley said it's a result of the sequester.
Year-by-year extensions really leave our counties in limbo, because this is, to a number of them, a vital source of base funding. And so we'd like to have it permanently authorized. The challenge is that, as with secure rural schools, within the sequester budget box, everything has to be paid for. And so we've been unable to persuade enough of our colleagues to make the commitment into the future. They've been willing to do it for a year, but not for multiple years. And so, for example, on secure rural schools this year, we had the helium bill that extended it for a year. The year before, I held a sit-in in the majority leader's office. Called up Senator Wyden, he came with his chief of staff. Called up Greg Walden, he came with his chief of staff. We were able to win the opportunity to put an amendment forward, but only for a one-year extension. That was secure rural schools. So the short answer is it's very tough to get more than 1 year at a time within the sequester budget box.
Merkley said there were some areas of common ground and cross-aisle cooperation. Merkley serves on the Agricultural Subcommittee of the Senate Appropriations Committee. On that committee, he worked along with Republican former Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana on legislation benefiting some rural electric users.
One example of that is the new program that is in the bill called the Rural Energy Savings Program. This is my bill that provides zero interest loans to rural electrical co-ops, and then they relend that money to businesses and to families within the purview of their co-op in order to for those folks to do energy efficiency retrofits or renovations. And the beauty of this is the most cost-effective way to create jobs, because you can't outsource any of the actual labor. It's all from here in America to America, and the goods that are used in the energy saving retrofits are made in America. One of the beauties of this is the loans are repaid on the electric bill, so when people save on their electric bill, they find it's much more affordable to do those retrofits, such as replacing their aluminum windows with double paned windows and so on and so forth. So this is something I had partnered with Senator Dick Lugar on, and then later with Senator Graham on, and it is now finally on the president's desk.
Other bill provisions affecting Oregon include increased funding of research and aid for specialty crops, such as berries, nuts, and nursery products, and the permanent authorization of a forest stewardship program where stakeholders can agree in advance on the terms of some timber sales, thus avoiding court actions. President Obama is expected to sign the Farm Bill tomorrow at Michigan State University. In Northwest Business News, Microsoft has a new CEO this week. Insider Satya Nadella was chosen for the post. Nadella is 46 and has worked at Microsoft for 22 years. The company also announced a change for its board of directors. Company co-founder and board chairman Bill Gates will be stepping out of the chairman's seat to become a technical advisor. For some analysis, KUOW Public Radio's Jamala Henderson spoke with Todd Bishop, the co-founder of the tech website GeekWire. She started by asking him for his reaction about Bill Gates.
Bill Gates is essentially, as Microsoft says, stepping up to this position. The company is trying to emphasize that Gates will be actually playing a larger role as this new technology advisor to Nadella. I think it says a lot about the fact that Nadella is going to be making a big leap to become CEO. He's been a strong business leader inside the company, but he's never led an organization at this scale before. And Gates will essentially be there as one of his right-hand people to guide him through the process and really try to, at the same time, ensure that the company is technologically relevant.
How big of a deal is Bill Gates' role change in all of this?
It's a significant deal. For the first time in Microsoft's history, Bill Gates is neither CEO nor chairman. I think Microsoft is going to be battling a bit of a public relations issue here in trying to convince people that Gates will actually be stepping up to this new role and not stepping down as much from his prior roles. But if Gates can come in and really have an impact as this advisor to Nadella and a person who's giving input to Microsoft's products, I think it's potentially a very big deal and something that could help the company get back on its feet in some of the markets where it's really struggled.
And so what do you think of this new appointment of Nadella?
It's been expected. I think it speaks to the challenges of finding someone for this position. Satya Nadella is very experienced, very well respected inside the company. I've been speaking recently with a number of people who worked with him inside the company, and they say he's thoughtful and deliberate, not afraid to make very difficult decisions. But at the same time, he's not widely known in the technology world, and it's going to be a bit of a challenge for him to assert himself and to assert his vision for the company, not just inside Microsoft, but across the tech industry and among Microsoft's customers, both businesses and everyday consumers who Microsoft wants to buy its smartphones, tablets, and PCs.
What's the next step, do you think, that's coming after this?
I think we'll see Bill Gates start to play a more central role inside the company again, at least spending one day a week there at Microsoft or the equivalent of that. And I think you'll see essentially Nadella starting to assert his new power and do it in a way I think that'll be relatively deliberate and careful. Aside from the fact that Microsoft did not get a marquee name here as its next CEO, I think they made a solid choice, even if some people might view it as uninspired.
That's Todd Bishop, co-founder of the tech website GeekWire. He talked about Microsoft's new CEO, Satya Nadella. Former CEO Steve Ballmer moved out of his office on Monday, but still remains on the board. The billionaire is likely to become Microsoft's largest individual shareholder next quarter if Bill Gates continues selling shares to aid his philanthropic interests. You're listening to The Bridge here on Coast Community Radio, 91.9 KMUN Astoria and 89.5 KTCB Tillamook. I'm Kathleen Morgane. Still ahead, Justin Newman of Emerald Vapors agrees that e-cigarettes should not be used by kids.
We believe that adults need to make that decision, and we would like to keep the product out of the hands of minors.
But legislators don't agree on exactly what an e-cigarette is. Chris Lehman explains. That story coming up in about 6 minutes. But first, the National Weather Service in Portland has issued a winter weather advisory for snow. It was in effect from 7 this morning. It will go until midnight tonight. The snow could likely begin this morning and continue much of today and into this evening. From 1 to 3 inches of snow is expected. Snow levels will reach down to near sea level. Continuing with the National Weather Service forecast for the Lower Columbia Coastal Region, snow in today's forecast mainly after 10, highs near 28 degrees. East winds 15 to 20 miles per hour, gusting as high as 28 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation today 90%. Total daytime snow accumulation of less than half of an inch possible. Tonight, a 50% chance of snow, otherwise mostly cloudy. Lows around 18. East-southeast winds 9 to 14 miles per hour, gusting as high as 20 miles per hour. Little or no snow accumulation expected. Tomorrow, a 30% chance of snow, mainly after 4 p.m., otherwise mostly cloudy, with daytime highs just under freezing, overnight lows in the mid-20s. Looking ahead to the weekend, warming temperatures on Saturday with a 40% chance of snow. Highs return to the mid-30s, with overnight temperatures just below freezing. And on Sunday, temperatures warm to the low 40s during the day and the high 30s overnight. Possible snow during the day with a chance of rain showers during the night. Gordon McCraw, meteorologist and director of Tillamook Emergency Management, says depending on which model you believe, we could see anywhere between a trace to over an inch of snow today. Temperatures will fall below freezing tonight. Ice is a concern. Saturday, snow showers are predicted for the morning. Then as the warm air overrides the colder air, we could see a period of freezing rain around midday before it turns to all rain late Saturday or Sunday when the highs climb back to the low 40s. Public dissatisfaction continues to be expressed about the City of Astoria's surplus property sales process. 1 year ago, the Astoria City Council held a goal-setting session to establish action items for the year 2013. One goal identified was to start reducing the amount of property held by the city by selling off so-called surplus or excess properties to private buyers. In the 1930s and 40s, many of the properties were acquired after their former owners could not meet tax obligations. The city holds them to this day, along with others, including second growth forested tracts and steep hillside properties. Of a total of about 1,300 parcels owned by the city, about 450 were identified by city staff as a starting point for evaluation as surplus. Of that number, 37 were then selected to be put up for sale. In August, local real estate firm Area Properties was engaged as the listing agency for the properties. In October, Astoria residents became aware of the proposed sales after owners of properties adjacent to an initial list of 9 received letters from Area Properties notifying them those properties were for sale. The letters informed adjacent property owners of their first right of refusal. If adjacent owners did not bid on the parcels, they would be offered to the general public. Since October, the surplus property sales have been an item of public discussion at nearly every Astoria City Council meeting. Concern has been expressed about selling steep slope properties unsuitable for building, the potential loss of green belts, fiscal concerns over selling city property at below assessed value, and the difficulty of finding specific information, including location and price, about the properties selected for the initial round of sales. On Monday, the City Council heard testimony from several residents, whether in favor of or in disagreement with the sales process. Most who testified were critical about the lack of detail provided to the public in advance of initiating the sales. Astoria resident Doris Queener presented the council with a petition signed by 163 area residents seeking to halt the excess sales process immediately and asking for a town hall-style public meeting to address questions and concerns. Council member Arlene Lemire expressed unwillingness to halt the sales while contract negotiations were in progress.
We're having our council goal setting on Friday, and I think this would be an opportune time to talk about this, whether we want to continue with it, whether we want to temporarily put a moratorium on it, whether we want to cease selling them. I think we need to come talk over what the best approach is for the city. I will say that again, from the very beginning, my aim was that these would be small bits of property that would add more or less buffers to adjacent property owners. and that these were properties that would not be purchased by anybody else except adjacent landowners. They would be the only ones that would be interested. And they are good for the city for three reasons. First of all, they bring money from sales of the property, even though it's not very much. It's more than they're bringing right now. They also bring in property taxes, which they're not bringing in right now. And they free the city from maintenance, which you may not think is very much, but liability as well. If a tree limb falls on somebody's head, then the city is liable, and this puts the liability with the property owner. And one of the things that I don't want to do is someone who is already in negotiation. We have one letter from a citizen who his property is in negotiation right now, and to all of a sudden stop this process right now for someone who's already put in a legitimate contract, I can't do that morally.
The council took no further action on the sales process at the Monday night meeting. Both Councilmember Lemire and Mayor Willis Van Dusen stated the council would take the matter up at their 2014 goal-setting meeting scheduled for Friday. As a postscript, due to inclement weather expected tomorrow, yesterday city officials announced the goal-setting workshop would be delayed. At this time, the session has not been rescheduled. Finally, sometimes technology outpaces the government's ability to regulate it. That's what's happening with electronic or e-cigarettes. Oregon lawmakers will consider a measure this month to restrict minors from buying e-cigarettes. The idea has broad bipartisan support, but the details of the legislation are getting criticism from a surprising source. Salem correspondent Chris Lehman reports.
Let's get this out of the way first. No one I talked to for this story thinks it's a good idea to sell e-cigarettes to teens. That's not where the controversy is. Instead, the dispute is over what exactly an e-cigarette is in the first place. For an answer, I turned to Justin Newman.
I would have been extremely happy having this in the beginning years of my marriage.
Newman is the co-founder of Emerald Vapors, a Eugene, Oregon company that makes e-liquid. That's the juice that gives e-cigarettes their flavor. And this is the sound of Newman taking a long drag on what is essentially a metal tube with batteries. As he exhales, a big cloud fills the air in front of his face. It looks like secondhand smoke. The first clue that it's not? The odor. This stuff smelled vaguely like incense. The second clue? Unlike a traditional cigarette, this one had no flame. The batteries heat up a coil which vaporizes the liquid. Newman says some, but not all of his products, contain nicotine, but he doesn't think any of it should be used by kids.
We believe that adults need to make that decision, and we would like to keep the product out of the hands of minors.
Emerald Vapors operates three retail locations, and Newman says they don't sell to teens. He's backing legislation in Salem that would make that the law for every dealer. Idaho and Washington already ban e-cigarette sales to youth, but the idea is running into some opposition from some groups you might not expect.
My name is Carrie Neeson, and I'm the Regional Director of Advocacy for the American Lung Association.
That's right, the American Lung Association. They certainly support a ban on selling e-cigarettes to kids. So why the hesitation?
I just think until we know more about what it does to lung health and what it does to public health, I think we just need to be very, very careful about any legislation that we pass around e-cigarettes.
Unlike tobacco products, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration doesn't regulate e-cigarettes. The agency is studying the issue, but for now says the risk of using them is unknown. But that uncertainty isn't why the Lung Association and other public health groups, including the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, are balking at e-cigarette legislation in Oregon and other states. Instead, they're concerned that the bills define the products as something entirely separate from regular cigarettes. That means they won't automatically be taxed and won't fall under most smoking bans. There is a proposal in Salem to restrict indoor use of e-cigarettes, but Republican Representative Andy Olson says he doesn't think lawmakers will go that far this year.
I think because of the short session, I think the best thing we want to do is kind of get a foot in the door right now and at least prohibit, you know, minors from being able to purchase, you know, e-cigarettes.
43 lawmakers have signed on to Representative Olson's bill to ban e-cigarette sales to teens. A separate measure would tax e-cigarettes like tobacco products. That bill has just one sponsor. I'm Chris Lehman in Salem.
That's all for today's edition of The Bridge. We welcome your comments on the show. Call us at 503-325-0010 or email to news1, that's N-E-W-S, then the numeral 1, at kmun.org. I'm Kathleen Morgain saying thank you for listening. And join us again next Thursday morning at 9 for more local and regional Northwest stories. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio.